Numbers chapter 35. All right, so first of all, he starts out here in the first 8 verses and deals with the cities of the Levites. All right, so verse number 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, command the children of Israel that they give unto the Levites of the inheritance of their possessions cities to dwell in, and ye shall give also unto the Levites suburbs for cities round about them. And the cities shall they have to dwell in, and their suburbs shall be for their cattle and for their goods and for all their beasts. And the suburbs of the cities which ye shall give unto the Levites shall reach from the wall of the city and outward 1,000 cubits around about. And ye shall measure from without the city on the east side 2,000 cubits, and on the south side 2,000 cubits, on the west side 2,000 cubits, and on the north side 2,000 cubits, and the city shall be in the midst. This shall be to them the suburbs of the cities. Now, there's some confusing things here, and I don't really understand it. So, first of all, these cities they got the city, and the city was probably a walled city, so that was, they knew exactly where the dimensions of that were. Then outside of the city, it says they were to measure 1,000 cubits. Now, how much is a cubit? Yeah, it's about a half a meter. About a half a meter. So it's about 500. Divide that of 1,000 cubits would be about 500 meters. All right. So about 500 meters around the city was their suburbs, and that was for their cattle and their goods and their beasts. But then in verse number 4. It says that they were to, it says they were to measure out 2,000 cubits. Now, that's very confusing. Commentators differ on it because it's a hard one to figure out. Some commentators think that it means that they had an additional 2,000 cubits or another 1,000 meters beyond the first 1,000 for their fields and their gardens. I don't know. It doesn't really make good clear sense why he mentions it twice right in a row and with different numbers, and why he even mentions it twice. If it was the same thing and it was just overlapping, why mention it twice? Why not just mention it once? So it seems like there probably was something significant outside of that border. So maybe the commentators that make that claim that it could possibly be all the way around the city, an extra 2,000 cubits or a kilometer outside of that would go around. Yes, Peter?
It just occurs to me that the 1,000 meters from the wall is outwards.
Yes.
Whereas the 2,000 meters might be the perimeter of the square formed therein. It doesn't say from the wall in verse 5.
Well, the thing of it is that if that was true, then you're assuming the city didn't take up any space. Well, if you're measuring 2,000 cubits outward,
that's 500 meters out in each direction. But that could be like 1,000 meters from that point of the square to that point of the square.
And then the city doesn't have any space. If the city, let's just say the city was a kilometer wide in diameter, just for sake of talk. All right? If the city was a kilometer in diameter, and you went 500 outside, 500 outside of that, then it would be 2,000.
Well, the cities are much smaller than that. I mean, this is the wall they're talking about, a walled city.
Yes.
Well, the walled cities weren't that big.
Well, maybe it wasn't. I'm just making that for a theory, but no matter how big it is, the way you talked about it by saying the total dimension was 2,000, if they already said go out 1,000, 1,000.
That's directly. So you go out 1,000 metres, or 500 metres, and 500 metres, so you've got a bigger square outside the city wall. I'm saying it could be 2,000 metres across each leg, each side of the square.
Like 2,000 square.
Yeah.
If I drew it on paper, I could show you where you're...
Well, I'm saying your verse 4 says from the city wall outwards, and verse 5 just says measure on the east side, west side, north side, whatever, south side. Does that not make sense?
There. tubals, an inner one.
I don't know. The bottom line is that we don't understand it, but it does tell us. The big thing to catch in all of this is that they had suburbs around the cities, okay? Now, these suburbs were there. They belonged to them. Now, why was that significant for them? Because they didn't have any, they didn't inherit anything else. That was their inheritance. They got these cities in the suburb around it in order to be able to find in a place for some, their cattle and for their food. But that's all they got. They didn't get the fields and the, you know, paddocks and the rolling hills that everybody else got. So they didn't get any of that. All right. Then as we move on here, the Levites were to receive 48 cities throughout the land, verses 6 and 7. Okay, and among the cities which ye shall give unto the Levites, there shall be 6 cities for refuge, which ye shall appoint for the manslayer, that he may flee hither, and to them ye shall add 42 cities. So all the cities which ye shall give unto the Levites shall be 48 cities. Them shall ye give unto their give with their suburbs. Okay, so they got 48 cities. Now, he said that they were to divide or to also among those 48 cities, 6 of them were cities of refuge. Now you can't see it very clearly on your map, but if you look at this one again, I'll point out where they are. All right, so at the top. The Golan was over here on the eastern side. Golan, and then Ramoth-Gilead, and then down here was Bezer. Golan, Ramoth-Gilead, and Bezer. They got stars on them, but you got to look kind of close on your map. Then on the western side, there was Kadesh, reading it upside down, Kadesh and Shechem and Hebron. Okay, so those are the 3 cities on that side. So they spread them out intentionally, obviously, so that if there was someone who was, you know, the purpose of the city was to protect innocent accidents, people from that were involved in accidents. Right? So if you're working in your garden and your axe head comes off and it hits the guy you're working with and it kills him, then you'd have to run immediately to the city of refuge. When you got to the city of refuge, they would protect you from the relatives that were trying to kill you. So the sooner you got there, the safer you'd get. And they would protect you until they had a civil court case. And so they would have to have that court case to be able to help decide whether you were guilty or innocent. All right, verse number 8, and the cities which ye shall give shall be of the possession of the children of Israel from them that have many, ye shall give many, and from but from them that have few, ye shall give few. Every one shall give his cities into the unto the Levites according to his inheritance, which he inheriteth. In verse 9, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye come over Jordan into the land of Canaan, ye shall appoint you cities of refuge for you, that the slayer may flee thither, which killeth any person unawares. All right, so unawares means it was an accident. He didn't know it. He wasn't meaning it. It just happened to happen. And they shall be unto you cities for refuge for the avenger that the manslayer die not until he stand before the congregation in judgment. And they sit in these cities which ye shall give shall be ye have for refuge. All right, so he says there that the purpose of that was to protect them and until the congregation could judge them. So they would stand before the congregation. So somehow there probably was leaders of the congregation. It wasn't probably the whole people come out there, but they had to decide whether this guy was guilty or not and evaluate how it happened and all the incidents that involved in that. And he gives details here on how to do that. Verses, let me just see if there's anything here. I'm skipping on my notes. I have a habit of skipping my notes. Okay. So God set the rules for them, and the rules in verses 16 to 23 are the rules for knowing whether they were guilty or not guilty. Verse 16, and if he smite him with an instrument of iron so that he die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be surely put to death. If he smite him with throwing a stone wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be, surely be put to death. Or if he smite him with a hand weapon of wood, wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall surely be put to death. All right, so if it's an obvious weapon, you know, whether it's an iron club or a wooden club or a stone, yeah, or an axe. So that, well, no, the axe head, you know, if two people, yeah, you got to look at it.
Deliberately.
What's that?
If he smite him, is the context saying that if he deliberately smites him?
Well, that's what they're trying to determine here, is whether it was intentional or whether it was accidental. Okay. All right, so if he's using an instrument that was typically used as a weapon, like an iron rod or a weapon of wood or a throwing stone, whether it be a slingshot or something of that nature, that was typically used for killing something, and so that he would be a murderer if he used that against his friend.
If he was checking a rock out of his field.
Yeah, well, if he was checking a rock out of his field and didn't know the guy was there, then that's what they've got to determine. All right? And he continues on there, the revenger of blood, verse 19, himself shall slay the murderer. When he meeteth him, he shall slay him. So if it was your brother that got killed, you got to go get him. And so you go chasing after this guy and try to catch him, and if he can beat you to the city, he's okay. If you beat him into the city, then it's his tough luck, I guess. And not a very good setup. But that's why they had these things spread all over, so you could take off running as soon as it happened. But verse number 20, but if he thrust him through of hatred, or hurleth at him by lying in wait that he die, or in enmity smite him with his hand that he die, he that smote him shall surely be put to death. All right, so these are just typical things. You can say, yeah, he was mad at him and he hated him, or he was trying to get after him and he got him and he killed him. Well, that's murder. All right, so it's basically the same thing we would look at today. And then the avenger of blood shall slay the murderer. Verse 22. But if he thrust him suddenly without enmity, or have cast upon him anything without laying in wait, of weight, or with any stone wherewith a man may die, seeing him not, and cast it upon him that he die, and it was not his enemy, neither sought his harm, then the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the revenger of blood according to the judgments. And the congregation shall deliver the slayer out of the hand of the revenger of blood, and the congregation shall restore him to the city of his refuge, whether he was fled. All right, so let's just stop there for a moment, in the middle of 25. So, if it was an accident, you know, these verses here, from 16 down through 24, are dealing with, was it intentional, was it an accident? And it's the same kind of things we'd look at today.
I mean, if, the accident and the stone being chucked out of the field accidentally.
Yeah, so it just wasn't, it was an accident. The guy's throwing rocks over his garden wall, and somebody's walking by, and you know, it gets clunked on the head. Well, he didn't know he was there. So that kind of thing. Okay, so there's the accidents. Now look at the middle of verse 25. This one here is a puzzle to me. I'm going to have to talk to the Lord about this one. He says, "The congregation shall restore him to the city of his refuge, whether he was fled, and he shall abide in it unto the death of the high priest, which was anointed with the holy oil." Why did God say that?
So even if he found innocent, he's still going to live in the city of refuge until the high priest dies.
Yes, but why? What happens if the high priest was just appointed last week and he's got 50 years ahead of him? You got a long stay there. Or what if the high priest was an old geezer that was about ready to kick the bucket and he dies next week? You only get in there for a week. Yeah, I don't understand that. Garrett?
Yeah. Well, like, what I kind of thought is, like, it says, and he shall abide in it. Sorry, one second.
It's 25.
Well, I kind of figured it's more like he would stay there if he thought his life was in danger.
No.
Say a year later, the person forgave him and wasn't going to kill him, and he could leave.
No. Absolutely not.
Read on the next few verses.
Yeah, you keep on going here. And if verse 27, and the avenger of blood, all right, verse 26, but if the slayer shall find him at any time come out of the border of the city of refuge whither he fled, and the avenger of blood find him without the border of the city of his refuge, and the avenger of blood shall kill the slayer and shall not be guilty of blood, because he should have remained in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the slayer shall return unto the land of his possession. So he's got to stay there until the high priest dies.
Is it the high priest oversees the whole judgment process?
I don't know. I mean, whether he does or doesn't, that's...
It's like a living record.
That's not the thing that troubles me. What I shared was the thing that troubles me. I mean, it may be a brand new high priest, and he might have a long life ahead of him, and you're stuck there for the rest of your life. Or what's that?
Motivation for assassinating.
Yeah. I mean, it is a funny thing. God could have said he's got to stay there for 10 years. He could have said you got to stay there until you're 40 years old. I mean, he could have said all kinds of things, but he chose this. I wonder why.
You want to go and see the high priest if you don't see how he's doing?
Taking some poison mushrooms, huh? Garrett.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it doesn't say what I was thinking. It doesn't obviously say that. But I was just thinking, maybe the reason they're just saying that, because the usual thing was, if you actually killed someone in your family, we're going to kill you. You know, that's just what people did back in those days. You know, it's almost like kind of popping your guinea. You just start family, we will get you. It was just the custom.
Oh, yeah, it was.
So even if technically they said you could go or whatever,
you'd be constantly
anyway.
Yeah.
So
no, you'd be in big trouble if you tried something like that. So, they had to stay there until the death of the high priest.
In consequence, if the high priest died and that person left the city of refuge and the family took vengeance anyway,
then the family would be guilty of murder. Then they would be the ones that were charged with murder if they did that.
It makes the death of the high priest a really big deal.
It does.
It means, you know, everyone's... And then suddenly all the cities of refuge are a lot of challenge.
Everybody's set free.
It sounds kind of random, doesn't it? Sort of.
Yeah. Every time I've read through that, I've asked myself, Lord, why did you say that? And I don't know. And we're going to have to just wait till heaven to get an answer, because there's no answer that I find. But... I'm sure God had a good reason for it, but he doesn't tell us why. Okay, so that is the one thing that I pick up there that is trouble to me. Okay, then we keep on moving here. Verse number 31, moreover, ye shall take no satisfaction for the life of the murderer, which is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. And ye shall take no satisfaction for him that is fled to the city of refuge, that he should come again to dwell in the land until the death of the high priest. All right, so there again, it tells us there's no exceptions. So ye shall not pollute the land wherein ye are, for blood, it defileth the land, and the land cannot be cleansed of the blood that is shed therein, but by the blood of him that shed it. Defile not therefore the land which ye shall inhabit, wherein I dwell, for I, the Lord, dwell among the children of Israel. So God was just saying, I cannot tolerate the shedding of blood, period. Whether it's accidental or intentional, even if it was accidental, the guy still gets punished in a sense. He has to live in that city, and it sounds like he can't even leave the walls of the city. I hope it was a big city. And he's got to stay in there for the rest of his life. Yes, sir?
Do you think the death of the high priest was some form of covering those sins, in a sense? And that's why God said the high priest, he has to die. And then in a sense, I know it sounds weird, because that's not normally what they did.
I honestly don't know. I don't know. But God had a good reason for it, and... you know, they were just, I suppose someone that was guilty of an accident like this was just grateful that they had protection. Because they did live in a barbaric country in a lot of ways. Like you said, comparison to Papua New Guinea type of thing. You know, up there, accidents don't happen. I mean, if you kill somebody, if a kid runs out in front of you and you're driving down the road and you hit him and kill him, you better take off for your life because they are not going to have pity on you. They'll come after you for blood. Even if it was totally the kid's fault, it doesn't matter. It's not fair, it's not right, but that's the way they do it. So as we move on to chapter 36 and finish the book up here, the chief of the fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of the son of Joseph, came near and spake unto Moses before the princes and the chief fathers of the children of Israel, and they said, "The Lord commanded my Lord to give the land for an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel. And my Lord was commanded by the Lord, Jehovah, to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, unto his daughters." All right, so we had dealt with that earlier. Zelophehad didn't have any boys. All he had was girls. And these five girls are saying, this isn't fair. What's going to happen to our portion of the inheritance? We're going to lose it. We marry somebody else, and wherever we go, we're going to lose our inheritance. So they had brought this before Moses earlier. And they, verse 3, and they, if they be married to any of the sons of the other tribes of the children of Israel, then shall their inheritance be taken from the inheritance of our fathers, and shall be put into the inheritance of the tribes wherein they are received. So shall it be taken away, taken from the lot of our inheritance. And when the jubilee of the children of Israel shall be, then shall their inheritance be put unto the inheritance of the tribe wherein they were received. So shall their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of their fathers. All right, so do you understand what's going on here? All right, so one thing that just crossed my mind, I didn't see it before, verse number 4, is this: when the jubilee of the children of Israel shall be. So I wonder what that means. So was it possible then that when someone married into another family, at the jubilee, things were supposed to go back to the original owners, and when that happened, things were settled, and after the jubilee, then it stayed that way. Maybe it had something to do with this as well. Verse number 5, and Moses commanded the children of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, "The tribe of the sons of Joseph hath said well. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded concerning the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, Let them marry to whom they think best, only to the family of the tribe of their father shall they marry. So shall not the inheritance of the children of Israel remove from tribe to tribe, for every one of the children of Israel shall keep himself in the inheritance of the tribe of his father." All right, so they wanted whatever lot the Lord gave them, that was to stay with their tribe forever. They were not to give it away. And that's why in the story of Ahab and Naboth, Naboth said, "I can't give you my vineyard. That's against the law. I can't do that." And that's when, he got mad at him and had him executed for it. But that was the law. And this is why here. Because God said, it's got to stay in their family. And then verse number 8, and every daughter that possesses the inheritance in the tribe of the children of Israel shall be a wife unto one of the family of the tribe of her father, that the children of Israel may enjoy every man the inheritance of his fathers. Neither shall the inheritance be moved from one tribe to another tribe, but every one of the tribes of the children of Israel shall keep himself to his own inheritance. So the inheritance generally went to the sons. So the son being the leader of the family, that portion of ground that dad had and grandpa had, now it belongs to me, and it stayed in the family. So with the daughters, they were free to marry outside of their tribe. So if you were of the tribe of Judah and you wanted to marry somebody from the tribe of Dan, that was perfectly fine. Except in this situation, if you had no brothers that were inheriting the land, then you didn't have any choice. You had to marry within your tribe. All right, so that's what he's getting at here. Now, verse number 10, even as the Lord commanded Moses, so did the daughters of Zelophehad, for Mahla and Tirzah and Hoglah and Milcah and Noah, the daughters of Zelophehad, were married unto their father's brother's sons. And how would you like to marry your cousins? I don't know of any cousins of mine I'd want to marry. But so they had to marry their cousins. Okay? And you know, they were married unto the families of the sons of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, and their inheritance remained in the tribe of the family of their fathers. These are the commandments of the judgments which the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses unto the children of Israel in the plain of Moab by Jordan near Jericho. Right? So, this was one of the special issues that came up. That how do we deal with this? You know, if somebody doesn't have any sons. And so he covered it in more detail earlier on, and now he's just kind of doing this in review. And he said that if there's no sons, then the inheritance goes to the, you know, and there's, if he has no children at all, then it goes to his next of kin, and they had a whole long list of, you know, who goes to and who goes to. But in this case, they had daughters but no sons. So the daughters got it, but the daughters had to marry within their own tribe in order to keep the inheritance within the tribe. Okay? Any questions on that? All right. So as we think of some principles here, you know, God's provision for the Levites, for the accidental killer, and for the man who had no sons reminds us that he cares for his people. You know, that's an important thing. God put these things together because he cared. These murderers, God could have said nothing about it and just let them act like the Papua New Guineans and just kill anybody that kills your relative and payback and all this kind of stuff. But God didn't have any of this payback nonsense. It was just, if there was someone who murdered, the murderer died. And that's it. But they could be protected. So God covered that and he cared for them. And then the situation for the man that didn't have any sons. It wasn't his fault. He didn't have any sons. All he had was daughters. And so God's intervened and met that need and provided so that there was, that was taken care of. And God also sanctioned capital punishment for murder to deter crime. And he never repealed that. That's still all through the scriptures. You won't find anything that says, no, God changed his mind on that. And then the cities of refuge protected the innocent, and a good reminder for us that we too need to strive to protect that which is innocent and right. You know, we could apply that to abortion, you could apply that to, you know, a lot of things. We need to live in a fair and a just culture as best we can, have our part in providing for that. All right? Any thoughts or comments?
Even though this is all for the Jews, and whether we understand it all or agree with it or not, God was very specific in his instructions.
Exactly. Yeah, he was. I mean, you find it all through the law. I mean, God was very specific in a lot of things. And some of it you think, whoa, that's pretty harsh, you know. I mean, I think of the guy that picks up sticks on the Sabbath day, and God says, all right, kill him. And whoa, yeah, that's pretty severe, but God had his reasons for it. And even the slaughter of all the pagans when they went into the land, you know, that seems harsh when we look at it. And from our perspective today, if you pulled off a stunt like that, you know, you'd be in major trouble. But they did it to protect the morality and the spiritual beliefs of the Jewish people. So there was a good reason for it.